You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Currently speaking to Brendan Moran from High Altar. Yeah. Hi, Brendan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I've woken up. I've had a coffee.
That's good. I've had a coffee as well. I'm not sure if I've woken up. Where are you calling from?
We're at a rental car place right by the airport, so there might be a jet flying over any time soon.
Amazing.
Completely drawn up, which is good because it kind of sounds like what we make.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm just going to do a wee intro for listeners. High Altar is a two-piece. Taipua Adams, am I saying his name right?
You are.
Excellent. Good. That's always good. Terror of the Deep and the Perms and Brendan Moran. Is it Moran or Moran?
We were actually talking about this, like the anglicisation of yes. Irish names.
Yes.
And how they're like pronounced incorrectly. It's actually Moran.
Moran. Okay. I will say it Moran then. I'm just thinking of Dylan Moran, so that's how I was.
Yeah. We're not related, but you know.
Okay, that's a shame because he's kind of funny. For Stalin, Hasselhoff Experiment, and the Subliminals, some of my favourite bands right there. And they are introducing their Neon Jazz project to Aotearoa with their Adoration of the Mystic Lamb tour. They're playing at Pearl Diver tonight, and I'm talking to the drummer of the band. So you played in Hasselhoff Experiment with the prolific and amazing Andrew Tolley, who really needs a statue for him.
I'm sculpting one at the moment.
Was that?
I'm sculpting one at the moment. That's going to be great.
And it will be very gangly, I imagine. It was also a two-piece outfit. Do you enjoy the directness of just two people, or is it just because without Jared Johansson on bass, that was in the Subliminals? Did I lose you? Yes. No, wait a sec. I did. I was waving my hands about and I unplugged you. Can we still hear you?
What about now? No?
I think we can. All right, yes, I can hear you. All right, good. Basically, I was being a smartass about Jared as being one of my favourite bass players. Do you like the
two-piece situation?
What's that?
The two-piece situation.
Yeah. Do you enjoy the directness of that, just two of you jamming?
Well, it's always risky, eh?
Yeah.
You know, like, because you don't have the other... like another group of people to kind of back you up. And I think me and Type sort of both feel that, you know. So that kind of, I think that allows us to always be on the edge of just completely disintegrating. Which is kind of nice feeling.
Yeah, it is.
So it's kind of, it adds an edge to it, I guess.
Nice. Yeah, I can see how that's appealing. So are there other two pieces that you really enjoy that have that edgy feeling?
Well, there seems to be a proliferation of two pieces in Auckland at the moment.
And it's true.
Funnily enough, this is the first time that I've done it with just like as a drum and bass band, which is kind of awesome, really. Because it does, like with what me and Andrew did, it was more sort of traditional in terms of like the musicality, and things were driven by lyrics and that type of thing. So it was, I guess, you could find an avenue into that in a easier way than you can with maybe what me and Type are doing.
I didn't realize it was bass and drum, actually. Sorry. I just made the assumption that it was guitar and drum.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
No. Bass.
Nice.
But, bass with a lot of effects pedals.
Yeah, right.
but there's kind of, it's tonally, there's a different element going on. And the response has been really positive, and it's been surprising for us because we're kind of like, in the middle of this thing going, what the fuck are we doing? And then people kind of go, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And we're like, yeah, neither were we. But it's great.
Nice, nice. So is it, you're described as semi-improvised. So does that mean that you have sort of a semblance of structure that you map out and then you jam from there, or is it just completely improvised when you
Yeah, we tend to have, like, each of us have kind of phrases within a loose structure. Mm. And then, see, there's that jet.
I can't hear
this
it.
Is high altar, what high altar sounds like. Yeah, so we've got these kind of frameworks of phrases that we kind of play around with, and they can fit over one another, and, you know, so there's that freedom about, like, we don't have to be tight structurally. We can sort of explore the dynamics within these different phrases and how they kind of relate to each other.
Nice. And
yeah, so there's, I guess you could have an argument about the semi-improvisation thing, like that's where it exists, sort of.
Mm. Do you think
that
people
did it?
Do you think people are more open to sort of experimentation and improvisation as a reaction to sort of overproduction at the moment? Do you think that that's what people are responding to more?
I don't know. I guess it's like that type of attitude is the sort of music I've been listening to for ages, and I mean, this is, I guess you could say, if you were to pose a question, what is neon jazz? Well, this is neon jazz. It's like a response to, for me, what is happening in the sort of music landscape, especially the commercial landscape, where it is, as Jello quoted, no amount of neon jazz could hide the oozing vibe of death. The oozing vibe of death is commercial music.
Yeah.
And, like, us as neon jazz are attempting to, like, destroy that, because I think it's actually having a bad impact on what people are doing with music and creativity. It's kind of, it's diluting this aspect of, you know, like, what making music or making art is all about, really. It's turning it into a commodity. Technology is enabling people that probably didn't have the privilege of doing it because they weren't that way inclined. So there is a democratization in it, which is great, but there's a trade-off.
Yeah, there totally is, especially, you know, with things like Spotify, where it just turned into wallpaper and people expect music to be wallpaper instead of challenging, which is really concerning.
And you've got Spotify creating their own music now and trying to impose that on people who can't identify, like, what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, much like AI with what you see and not being able to believe anything as well, which is really concerning. I'm going to play that Dead Kennedys track, which you reference, the neon jazz line. I'll play that after your track. Also because it's nice to have any excuse to play some Dead Kennedys, frankly. So you and Taipua were previously in a band, Vorstellen, with Matthew Heine from Spud and Solid Gold Hell, and some of your tracks were like 18 minutes long. Has it been hard reining it back to 5 and 6?
Well, the 5 and 6 thing is really just for the necessity of the format that we put these songs on. So, like, we cut them, we made lathe cuts of them.
Wow.
And the duration that we had to work with was 5 and 6 minutes.
Nice.
Live, we tend to kind of go where there's no limit to whether it's going to be a long or a short song.
Nice.
Whereas Vorstellen was kind of like the expectation was nothing was to be under 10 minutes, because it was about this hypnotic disorientation process of like taking the listener out of the physical space they were in. And the only way that you can do that is by, you know, like Chinese water torture.
That's a very unkind depiction of the sound that you're creating, but it's
great. It's, you know, it's this repetition, like it was a repetition process, and it was like, and it was to to go to just keep doing the same thing over and over until people started questioning what it was that they were listening to. And and once again, like, that had a positive response. Like, people were like, oh, I didn't think that I would, you know, like that type of torture. So now we've got a different type of torture, which is what my alter has become.
Can, so most of the bands that you've been in have been like super sort of like sludgy and heavy and kind of krautrocky influence. Do you, can you ever see yourself going into pop territory?
Well, if I'm to, you know, have complete disclosure here, I did do a stint in Fly My Pretties. And I think, like,
was it enjoyable?
There's a certain amount of trauma involved in that, and this is a cleansing process. I'm trying to rid myself of the absolutely farcical mistake I made, and I'm sorry for taking listeners on that journey of
it's so funny.
Of the commercialization of music.
We've all done stuff for money, man. You know?
Well, it wasn't for money. I didn't get paid much.
Well, that's frustrating. It's good to experiment, though, because sometimes you kind of like, it pushes you out of your zone, and you kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, no, I know that that's not for me, indeed. No.
And I mean, I don't have any regrets in doing it, because the whole, like, the whole thing about, like where I've been trying to take myself is, like, I want to be able to play as many different styles of music as I can, and write as many different styles of music as I can. You know, and the only way that you can do that is by listening to lots of different things and playing lots of different things, and they all become the same thing, you know, like, it's a process. And you know, like, I've got an electronic solo thing that I do with drum machines and and modular synths and stuff, and you know, and I've played lots of different things. I play like real improv, non-idiomatic music. I've been in surf bands of, you know, all that sort of stuff, and it's great. It's great to be able to adapt to these kind of musical challenges.
Yeah, for sure. Especially as a drummer, I guess you get to explore that in quite an interesting way. Are you a like gear nerd? Do you have lots of kits?
I used to. I've only got one. So, like, the one kit that I've got left is the very first one that I had when we started Hasselhoff.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a total gear nerd over there. Like, no. But I'm now kind of geeking out a little bit on technology. So I've got, like, analog synths and pedals. And I just, you know, I'm just sitting at home, like, cutting and pasting shitty practice room recordings of drum beats that I've done and trying to make sense out of stuff, which is lots of fun.
That sounds like a hell of a lot of fun. So tonight you're playing at Pearl Diver, and it's Koha Entry with LSD fundraiser, but at the same time Japanese beat rocker Maverick Death Row is playing as well, but you're opening for them in Littleton. Will you be catching up while you're here?
Hang out,
yeah.
There you go.
Awesome. Nice. That's really cool. It's, we've got like two Japanese bands coming to Otapuri in the space of like a weekend. Yeah, we've got Guitar Wolf on Sunday, so, and then Death Row playing tonight, so that's awesome. How did you discover LSD Fundraiser? What made you ask them to open for you guys?
They were recommended by friends.
Nice. Yeah. That makes sense.
Same place.
I mean, I've seen the name LSD Fundraiser around for ages, yeah. And I've always, like, I haven't heard a lot, yeah. But I kind of know, like, where they come from. And
nice.
And, like, I think both of us are really into that. You know, like, we kind of, when we're doing shows, like, I don't want these kind of like sound alike bands that people tend to do, yes. With gigs. It's like, yep. Oh, let's all make a gig of things that sound the same and we'll have five bands and that's what people want. I think we're kind of more into going, oh, let's just get something that's completely opposite, or not opposite, but,
or just a different perspective.
It's doing, doing a similar concept, but from a different place.
Yeah,
and let's put that together and see what happens. It's kind of, you know, like, I guess I reference art a lot because, like, I think the most interesting sort of environments for art is when you take kind of disparate things and you try and make connections between them, or you look for connections,
yeah,
or you discover connections,
yeah,
absolutely. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do with shows, and you don't need any more than 2x because there's too much stimulation
especially when it's as stimulating as what your bands are. yeah, because Death Row has a different, completely different sound to you as well, but it's still really interesting and edgy and sort of pushing things out. So, okay, well, if anyone wants to catch you guys, you're playing tonight at Pearl Diver. And yep. Thanks so much and for having a chat. I appreciate it.
Thanks for allowing us to chat.
Yeah. Oh, no,
it's been good.
It's been awesome. Yeah, thanks so much. I'm gonna.
It's great to hear you're playing the songs.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. No, I downloaded them immediately. Actually, bought them, paid money. Oh,
we have tonight. Yes. So we just got another lathe cut. So it's an exclusive South Island version.
Nice.
And there's very, very, very few of them. Yeah.
Excellent. I'm sure there will be a lot of people that will be really into purchasing them from you at the door.
Cool.
All right. I'm going to pull some plugs out and do all that sort of stuff. It's going to be, wait a sec. Thank you so much, Brendan. Have an awesome time tonight. Bye.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. All right. We are pulling a plug out, pushing a plug in, and we are going to play High Altar, and this is Earth Signal, and then I'll play the Dead Kennedys track that influenced their sound and name.
A Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.